Christian greetings. Certainly have enjoyed the worship service here today. I grew up in Lancaster County on a dairy farm, and where we live is very, very different than this. And so as we came here for the wedding and stayed right adjacent to an Amish farm, I said to my wife this morning, I guess it's just too late for us to join the Amish, isn't it? But there's something really attractive about the fields, and I particularly saw the cornfields beginning to be cut, and I you know, harvest is really a wonderful thing. We enjoy harvest. We watch these plants grow in our gardens, and eventually there is a harvest. Where we live, there are, along the lake there, 11,000 acres of Concord grapes. And we watch those. We're beginning to smell them as we drive on the road as they ripen. But occasionally there is an early frost or a late freeze, or occasionally the harvest is really hurt. And I just can't imagine the farmer that needs to go out into his fields and take care of those vineyards and put new posts in and trim them and get them trained to the wire and all the work that goes into that, and then no harvest. It froze. They're gone. There's no grapes. Shifting a little bit, I'd like to think this morning the title of the message is The Harvest of the Home. I look across your congregation, and one of the interesting things to see is, and I love to see, is children and homes and children growing up. We're working with something much more involved than gardening. And we work with souls that have an eternal life to them and an eternal ending. And so it becomes very, very serious. There is a sense in which we experience harvest like a child has a series of seasons, and there's sort of a harvest as you go through life. Maybe that child that enters first grade and does well in school, there's sort of a bit of a harvest there from the years where they grew up in, you know, as a very young child. They come to adolescence, accept Christ as their Savior, are baptized and brought into the church, and there's sort of a harvest there. They go through their years as youth and all the pressures that our young people face today, and you know, if they're faithful and they serve God and they move into adult life, there's kind of a harvest for the parents. But then there is an eternal harvest. My wife was a Martin, and we have a ancestry book that tells a story about one of her great-great-great-grandfathers who was in prison in Europe, Switzerland, I believe, for 17 years. And his three sons left. I don't know how you do this. They left Switzerland and came to America and started farming. And one day, their father walked into the barnyard. There's no communication. They didn't know if he was in prison. He was alive or dead, and here he came. And the book says there was no reunion ever before or like it, or since then, like that reunion that happened in that barnyard. You just think for a moment about the reunion that will happen in the eternal world. And just the joy of, as you look into the eternal world and you see the glories of the whole thing, and you realize that your children are there or your parents are there, and here we are. We're safe and we made it. Well, that will be quite a reunion too. I realize that the subject of the home is a huge subject. We're only going to scratch the surface. I want to just give you 7 pointers to parents this morning that you would, that there would be a good harvest. These, I trust, will be helpful to you. And I'm going to use an unusual text. Turn with me to Galatians 6. This passage is directed to the church. And I'm not sure if it's proper hermeneutics to take a passage that's directed to the church and apply it to the home. But the basic principles of the Christian life and the basic principles of church life, there are truths woven into that that apply to the home. They really are. And so I'm going to take these first number of verses of Galatians 6, and we'll read them, and then I want to just think about how this relates to our home and to us as parents. I'll read the first 10 verses of Galatians 6. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. If a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For every man shall bear his own burden. Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. For as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of your own household, who are of the household of faith. Number one. Try to make this brief. As I look at verse 1, and you think about the context of church, and a brother overtaken in a fault, and he says it will take spiritually meek people to help him. I would just like to make this point about our homes. It takes spiritual discernment to do redemptive work. Our children are born into this world with a whole series and catalog of faults. They have a lot of needs. They have an Adamic nature. They know how to express it. By early childhood, they are selfish. They get very, very angry as a very, very small child. They are deceptive. They have a natural bend toward world and wickedness. You know, sometimes we watch, I actually feel sorry for a parent who has no biblical context and tries to raise a family. Because it takes a spiritual, discerning parent to be able to raise a family for God. But you watch this in the grocery store and you see a parent who has maybe no Bible foundation whatsoever. And the chaos that ensues. And you hear a mother says, I will kill you. What a thing to say to a child. And those kind of things. When an individual is in the lot for ordination, I think one of the questions on the questionnaire is about your personal devotional life and about family worship. It's good questions. How can you feed the flock of God if you don't know how to feed yourself? How can you rule the house of God if you don't know how to rule your own family? But it takes spiritual discernment to raise these little children that come into our homes. It really does. As you try to understand maybe their makeup, maybe their own personality, but you want to impress upon them the greatness and goodness of God and the consciousness of His watchful eye and their obedience to not only their parents, but to a God in heaven. And as parents, we constantly look for answers. Sometimes we struggle with this child that has this strong nature and this strong will, and sometimes it feels like you've tried everything and it just don't work. Be consistent and do what is right. But it takes godly discernment to be able to do this redemptive work that you are called to do with your children. You are constantly redeeming them from their fallen carnal nature. You're constantly helping them to change and to adjust. You can't save them. Jesus does that. But you bring them to a place where they understand the great call of the gospel and they understand how to yield to it. And as you help them to yield as a child, you're preparing them for the harvest. Help that child to have a clear conscience and to enjoy life, because there will be a harvest. Spiritual discernment to do that great work. Secondly, I think we need to have a goal. Bearing one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ, we need to demonstrate the heart of God to help them with their burdens in life. Bearing one another's burdens is at the very heart of the gospel. It's not the most important thing, maybe, this whole sin question and salvation through Jesus' blood, but at the heart of the gospel is to help people with their burdens. At the heart of the gospel for a parent is to help their child with life's burdens. When you read Psalm 103, it gives us a beautiful concept of God's heart in relation to read a couple of verses there. Psalm 103. But listen to the heart of God as he says, "For as the heaven is high above the earth, so great is his mercy toward them that fear him, as far as the east is from the west." And then verse 13, "Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. For he knoweth our frame, he remembereth we are dust." And somehow that heart of God needs to be demonstrated in the parent to their child. Every child needs to know that even when father and mother are a little strict, or they say no, or they're restrictive, that yet I know that my father loves me. I know my mother loves me. The child needs to understand that. And as they relate to their, you know, children have all sorts of, and I remember as a child some of the things that looked like mountains to me that when you get older they're not. You know, that difficult lesson in school and that bad grade, or that some child mistreated me and wasn't nice to me and wasn't fair to me, misunderstood. Be careful though when they come home from school with their stories, because sometimes there's another side to the story as well. But sometimes homes have certain restrictions and the child says, well, everybody else is doing it, or everybody else is wearing it, or everybody else is going. Be understanding about their burdens, but still make right choices for them and help them. Be understanding about their concerns, about their fears. We had a child in our home growing up that she grew up that was terrified by the sound of a siren. We have a little granddaughter that comes to our house, and if she hears the train, she is just very, very concerned. Don't just laugh those things off. Don't make light of them. Help that child to understand the truth about the train whistle and about the train will not come up through the fields like the storybooks do. Maybe that's part of our problem sometimes too. But understand their burdens. Understand their burden as a school child, as a youth, the things that trouble them. Talk to them about them. Know about them. Ask them about them. Have the kind of relationship that they're free to tell you about their burdens and don't just laugh them off and act like there's nothing to it. They're real. Just the way God cares about some of our ridiculous things that we worry about, like as a father pitied his children. All right, the third one. Verse 3. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. If a man think himself to be something when he is nothing. That's quite the verse there. But a parent needs to rescue their child from pride. Maybe that's a rough way to say it, but pride is so deceitful. There are so many ways that a child can be proud. But pride is part of the human nature. It's actually part of Satan's nature, his attribute, to think himself to be like the Most High. And Proverbs says that pride goeth before destruction. A very young child can be proud of their hair and their shoes and so on. I heard a preacher say one day, don't ever put anything on your child that you will have to pray off of them later in life. Pride. It's amazing what children know already as a 3- and a 4-year-old about their hair and their shoes and that kind of thing. But there's pride of possessions, who we are as a family, family pride, pride of extravagance of our lifestyle, pride of excelling. As much as we're in favor of academic achievement and your child doing as well as they can in school, sometimes a child is very brilliant and they excel and they do better than most of their peers. Don't let them be proud of that. Help them be a humble person. Pride by excluding other people. When I was a teenager, we had a family in our church that we ignored. And I wish I could go back and do that all over again. It was so wrong. Pride by excluding other people. Pride in our own judgment. You know, I know better than other people. Why? Because there will be a harvest. Pride has an ugly harvest. A parent needs to rescue their child from their pride. If a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. The fourth one, and verse 4, let every man prove his own work, then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. Help your child to experience the satisfaction of his own performance. Now, that almost sounds contradictory to the pride thing, but it's not. Help your child to experience the satisfaction of his own performance. I watched these Amish children the last couple of days and the work they do and catching horses and work from the time the sun goes up till it goes down. But there is something about a child's growing up. They need to know what it is to make a contribution and to be happy about that contribution. Our devotional leader got up this morning and said, I really would rather not get up. Now, this is how we feel. I know that's how we feel. Most of us feel that way. But there is something about the satisfaction of doing the work you're called to do, that even when you don't feel like it, there's satisfaction in it. When I was a rather young boy, maybe 14 years old, or maybe 15, there was an old spring harrow in the weeds there in the farm that we no longer used, sort of an ancient piece. And it was 3 sections wide and had teeth missing. And my father said to me, if you want to take that thing, we just had a welding class in school. He said, make 2 pieces out of it, move teeth all over and make two pieces out of it and paint it. And we'll take it down to M.M. Weaver's annual consignment sale. And you can have the money that you get out of it. And I took great interest in that and moved the teeth over and welded things together and painted it red. And I got $45 for it, which in 1968-9, it was quite a bit of money. And I was really quite satisfied, had that satisfied feeling of having worked at that thing. And, well, that's how it works. You know the girl who learns to bake a cake or make the whole meal for the evening supper or learns to sew her own dress. Those kind of things. I had a daughter came home from school today, one day, and was totally distraught with the assignment, English assignment, to write an argumentative essay. What grade do you write an argumentative essay in? About grade 8, 9, 10? Do you have to write an argumentative essay? What a job. I mean, I would really complain about that. That's ridiculous. Why would you write about an argument? So she had a bad attitude about it, and or at least a frustrated attitude about it. And I tried to think for a while about what we could do and help her with it. And I thought about how my wife just insisted on hanging the wash out on the wash line. It didn't matter if it was freezing or if there's a thunderstorm coming up, but the wash had to be put on the wash line. And I would say, put it in the dryer. And I said to her, why don't you write an argumentative essay on whether you use the wash line or the dryer? And you could call it dry air or air dry. And she took that thing and ran with it and did a terrific job. And when she was all finished, I said, what for grade did we get? Because I thought I got part of the grade too. All right, so, but your child, even in those kind of assignments, needs to know the joy of having faced it, accomplished it, made it happen, and the joy of that grade and the approval of their parents and their teacher or whatever it is. Let every man prove his own work. You know, I enjoy listening to sermons. I enjoy hearing what other people are accomplishing and reading missionary stories and all those kinds of things. But every person inside the heart of every Christian is a desire to do something for God. And you get a great joy and satisfaction when that young person, where are you, goes to somewhere in Florida to help clean up and you carry mud out of a basement. Isn't that fun? It's not really nice work. It's ugly work. But the satisfaction of having helped somebody in need, you'll never get from tossing a volleyball around. All right, I said that. Number five. And verse five. For every man shall bear his own burden. And that word burden is, I think, in Strong's is the same as a shipload. Every man has his lot in life and his things that he needs to carry. Help your child, number five, to accept the burden part of life, the burdens of life. Life has a whole series of, I used to tell my children, I think they all probably all know it, but I would say, you know, life is about a lot of hard work. Life is about a lot of hard work. And, you know, as a result of the fall, we live with, you know, in the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread. But we actually learn that toil is good for us and is a benefit to us. We are tempted, this is a mistake for us, we are tempted to create a lifestyle with as least amount of toil as we can get away with. Is that true? We like to do things that eliminate work, make life our lifestyle so nice that, you know, we don't have to paint the house or Oh, I don't know what to use for an illustration. We have things pretty nice, and I think it's a mistake to not have a garden, generally speaking. There's some exceptions to that. Garden is a lot of toil. Right now, we have a strawberry patch that needs a lot of attention. We need to get home and do it. But there's a lot of things that we learn in the garden. And that toil, we need to learn to accept that this is how life is. Life has toil, it has weeds, it has maintenance, it has things that we need to do, and to try to create a lifestyle that we don't have those things, I think is generally a mistake. For every man shall bear his own burden. Our children need to see us handle life's burdens by the grace of God. They need to see that we're not distressed, we're not frustrated, we're not angry, we're not moody with life's burdens, but we just sort of accept the fact that this is how life is. This is not heaven. This is earth. And life is about a lot of hard work and a lot of toil and a lot of sweat and a lot of tears. And the sooner our children learn that that is how life is, probably the better. All right, two more. Verse 6. Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. And that verse is simply saying, be appreciative of those who come into your circles or stand up from Sunday to Sunday and teach Sunday school and preach the sermons. Be appreciative of them. And I simply wrote, help your child to appreciate their teachers. To say thank you. To appreciate even their grandparents and their aunts and uncles, but their school teacher and their Sunday school teacher. I think one of the worst things that a parent can do is to reflect against their child's teacher, their child's preacher, or their child's Sunday school teacher. And somehow what's happening in Sunday school or what's not happening in Sunday school is the teacher's problem. And if that teacher is and talk in derogatory ways about them, this verse underscores respect for authority. And we all find ourselves under authorities, whether we're a bishop or a pastor or a school teacher or any work that we do in the state that we live in. But help your children to relate properly to their authorities, to give gifts to their school teacher, to be the kind of person that likes their school teacher and loves them and loves their teachers. That's a point in itself. All right, and the last one, teach your child the law of sowing and reaping. That's found in the next two verses. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. He that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit. And there's so much to say about that, but a growing young man, for example, needs to be told by his father not only that immorality is wrong and it's sinful, but that there is a reaping that goes with immorality. There's a dreadful reaping that goes with something like pornography. And it opens one's life to the forces of darkness. There's a reaping for listening to the world's music. Now, you know, I read an account where a university played around with music. And they came up with a kind of music that would kill plants. Play this music in front of plants and they would actually die. There's music in our world today that is deadly to a Christian. It's deadly. And the old lie of the serpent that said, you shall not surely die. Many people feel that way about the world's movies and music and all of its attractions. Yeah, not die. We won't die. But the world's music and its entertainments and its spices are deadly to a Christian. And they sap your life. And that day Adam and Eve did die. They did not die physically, but they certainly died spiritually and needed a redeemer. Help your children to count the cost of disobedience. I heard a preacher say one time, never count the cost of obedience, count the cost of disobedience. And think about that. But we do need to count the cost of disobedience. We need to know that it's not just we do wrong and we sin, but there are consequences that are attached to that. And there's a law of sowing and reaping. And if we live to the flesh, you look around us in our world and you look at all the heartache and the sadness and the tears. We have a truck shop, a tire shop and trucks, and we have semi-trucks coming in. And these drivers want to stand there and watch you change your tire. Once in a while, I'll say to one, I actually am really wealthy man. They say, you're still changing tires? How old are you? I said, but I am really actually a very wealthy man. Really? Yeah. Yeah. I said, I have 50 grandchildren. And they look at me and some of them say, you are a wealthy man. You are a wealthy man. But count the cost. Don't count the cost of obedience. Just live in obedience and you'll reap tremendous blessings. And sometimes we need to tell them about how rich we are in relation to spiritual blessings as well. There is something extremely beautiful about children growing up, and there's a harvest, and the beautiful results of holy living and living for the Lord. What a reward for a parent to see and to watch. In closing, we'll read verses 9 and 10 again. Let us not be weary in well-doing. Sometimes you talk with parents, they come to you and they just are perplexed with, it seems like they've tried everything and they're doing what they think they ought to be doing, and yet the child is not responding the way they hoped they would. And it's hard going. Don't be weary in well-doing. Don't give up. Be consistent and keep at it. For in due season we shall reap if we faint not. That's true for the Christian. It's true for the parent as well. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men. You know, church life is important to us. We appreciate church life and community is important to us, and we try to help people where we can. But especially unto them who are of your own household. Love them and care for them. And do what you can, because there will be a harvest. Let's kneel for prayer.